This podcast is sponsored by The Knowledge Website, a digital digest that cuts through the noise. Brought to you by the founder of The Week, John Connell. Every day, The Knowledge gives you all you need to know in just 5 minutes, delivered straight to your inbox or to your app. Sign up for free at theknowledge.com to get the most interesting ideas, the stories that matter, and the quirkiest anecdotes, all expertly curated.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. Now, when it comes to the reopening, international travel has often been the aspect which has come under the most restrictions, but there's signs that is now changing. James, what's the government's current thinking when it comes to trips abroad?
So the government's current thinking is to allow double vaccinated people who are coming from the EU or the United States into the UK without quarantining. This would obviously facilitate both more business travel and more tourism. And I think the decision to do this is a sign that the government is moving away from the idea, you know, that quite associated with the former Health Secretary Matt Hancock, of having a kind of, you know, almost Australian-style border policy. It is essentially saying fully vaccinated people from the EU and the US, you know, really don't pose any risk, so they can come here, we'll try and get international travel going. I think the interesting thing is that the US is not releasing its restrictions on travellers from either the EU or the UK. So this isn't going to be an entirely symmetrical relationship. But I think the attempt to say that you recognise both the EU COVID pass and the paper US state-level vaccine certificates is a sign that the government is very keen to get this moving.
Isabel, when it comes to the cabinet split on this, we're hearing that there is a relaxation, but yet there is some reluctance amongst certain ministers. What do you think the concerns here are? Is it that the government's been burnt in the past by trying to move too quickly?
Yeah, I think there is an anxiety that the government could end up making similar mistakes to the ones it made around particularly the Red List and India, which is now seen as being a big mistake in the delay in putting India on the Red List and allowing, as the Labour Party keeps saying, the Delta variant to come into this country and to spread unchecked in the way that it did, which has made this unlocking quite so fraught in a way that no one had expected it. So there's a worry that once again some ministers are being too gung-ho, but then you've got other ministers who are saying, look, you know, the travel industry is screwed, and the lack of certainty, the lack of progress in terms of letting double vaccinated people have more freedom in terms of travel is really hurting a big sector in our economy. And it won't have escaped Boris Johnson's notice as a constituency MP, for instance, given the number of jobs in his own constituency that rely on the aviation sector and the wider travel industry as well.
James, what do you think are the risks here? Because it definitely feels as though the mood music in government is much better if you look at the current case numbers. Where there were, I'd say, heavy nerves last week about the reopening, everyone feels lighter. But one thing, people do remain worried about a variant. So how much of a risk is this?
Well, I think it is not that much of a risk in that you are only allowing in the fully vaccinated from countries which generally tend to have fairly high levels of vaccination. I think international travel more broadly will become a more contentious question because of concerns about variants. I think it is also a sign of a kind of shifting mindset in government that, essentially, if you don't do this while other countries are beginning to open up their rules, you put them yourselves at a competitive disadvantage. I mean, that is one of the bits of logic behind that. But I think, as Isabel said, you know, you see that Labour are opposing the move. You know, it's not going to be entirely politically straightforward. But I think there is a sense that, you know, as things like the business support schemes and furlough wind down, you either need to accept big job losses or you need to get these things moving again.
And Isabel, we've had some other news today. So the first about self-isolation, we know that it's going to be eased next month, but the double jabbed won't even need to do tests daily is the suggestion. Instead, it will be the case that they can just be advised to self-isolate, to come into contact with someone rather than have to prove. But I suppose this builds into something bigger, which is, If we look at the past week and why it has felt chaotic when the government did lift the legal restrictions, it's partly been down to what's come to be known as the pingdemic. And therefore, with the criticism about the reopening hasn't just been health, it's also been about restrictions on the economy, if lots of workers are off. Yet, Boris Johnson has made some comments today about the economic recovery. What has he been saying?
So he's predicted, he was giving an interview on LBC, he's predicted that the UK is going to see a steady economic recovery and that job numbers are increasing that things are basically on their way up. And this is the great hope that the Conservatives are holding on to. It's something that you've written about in the past few days, that they're poll lead is obviously not where they'd want it to be. There's an anxiety that they may have squandered the vaccine bounce, or at least they might be back on the way down from the vaccine bounce. But the thing that a lot of Tories are holding on to is that the economic figures are going to be really good in the coming months, and that the same sort of credit that the government got from people for the vaccination programme, you can have a debate about whether ministers really should take the credit or whether it's the NHS or whoever, but they have, you know, they have enjoyed a good time in the polls as a result of that, and that they're going to have a similar experience as people's jobs start to come back, as people start to see the economy surging ahead, and as it starts to feel as though Britain is, I was going to say coming back, but that was a George Osborne phrase from a few years ago, which shows how much of a political hermit I am, that I'm just regurgitating old politicians' old stock phrases. But there is this, but that is the hope that Conservatives are holding on to, that people will also feel the recovery quite tangibly, as well as seeing it happening in their numbers.
And finally, James, we've had the news today that the steel company Sheffield Forgemasters is set to be nationalised in a £2.6 million deal with the Ministry of Defence. Can you talk us through that decision?
Well, I think this is interesting because it does highlight a shift in Tory thinking on these kind of companies in sensitive supply chains. If you remember back in 2010, Katie, the incoming coalition government cut a loan to Sheffield Forgemasters. This turned into a big controversy because Nick Clegg was the Sheffield MP and Deputy Prime Minister in the coalition, and it became kind of emblematic of arguments about austerity. I mean, this decision is interesting because it shows that, you know, the belief in the importance of having kind of sovereign intellectual property in these key areas. I also think it is the first interesting run out for the UK's post-Brexit state aid regime. The decision to nationalise it would be possible under EU state aid rules, but what would be much more difficult would be the plan to offer it kind of ongoing support, which is what the government is intending to do. And I think what it reflects is that, you know, as we enter into this new era of kind of global technological competition, firms like this have taken on an importance beyond their role in the marketplace, in part because of the kind of unique capabilities they have, but also the intellectual property that they own.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.